Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 168. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, man?
Dude, I'm excited. It is the day. I've even got my special hat on for today.
Oh, my goodness, that hat. All right, so for those that are just listening to this, you don't get to see this beautiful thing that I'm looking at. John's wearing a scrolling vSAN 7U1 hat. That is genius.
Yeah, no, this is my new launch day hat until I find a cooler hat. So
I like it. You should wear it every episode and just title the episode on the top. Yeah, but it says vSAN 7U1. So yeah, that's what we're talking about today. Big launch this week for VMware. There's some pretty big features in this one that I'm excited to talk about. When we talk vSAN, we always bring on our good friend Pete Keeler. So coming back to the podcast, Mr. Pete Keeler. Pete, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Hi, John. Hi, Pete. And yes, this hat is fantastic. It would have been very fitting, of course, in Las Vegas if we were going there this year for VMworld or anywhere else that has a marquee to it. But thanks for having me, though.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, Pete, man, so many different things came out for vSAN 7U1. There's blog posts and tech notes and all kinds of demo videos, lots of great information that we'll be leaving on the show notes of the page. But I thought it would be great to do a podcast with you, and maybe we can walk through some of the more substantial items on this release. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do this. There are so many features, just as you mentioned. So we'll just try to cover the key ones, I think, that are going to be really important for many of our customers. And some of them are some features that they've been asking for a long time. And for one reason or another, we were able to make it happen on this release. So yeah, let's get going.
Yeah, let's start. So what do we want to start with?
Let's talk about a new feature that we introduced here in vSAN 7 Update 1 called HCI Mesh.
Oh, yeah.
So what this is, you know, first we need to think about vSAN clusters and how they're unique in that they treat storage as a resource of the cluster. And that's really a great benefit and very different than a traditional three-tier architecture. But we've heard from our customers and their requests in saying that they want to have a more flexible way to grow and size their clusters to accommodate some of these situations that they weren't necessarily accounting for. So what HCI Mesh does is it allows you to borrow storage resources from one vSAN cluster over to another vSAN cluster. And that's going to allow you to run that VM that is living on one cluster, but the actual storage resources, the capacity and the performance are being used from the other cluster. And it's all easily accessible and configurable right within the UI.
Okay, so how does this work? How do I choose which data store I want to use?
So mounting the remote data store feels very similar to any sort of mounting of a data store that you would have in a three-tier architecture. So you're just going to select one of the data stores by another vSAN cluster, and you can use that as the consumption for the given VMs. And because you're using this separate vSAN data store, then it's going to allow you to, if you're going to be doing vMotions from one cluster over to another, you can do a compute-only vMotion as opposed to a full storage vMotion and compute vMotion. So it really just offers so much more flexibility for our customers. And, you know, we had a number of different ways that we could have gone about achieving this end result. And, you know, some solutions go with things like a storage-only node, but we really wanted to approach this differently and do it in a better way. Because when you think about storage-only nodes, that can introduce all kinds of design and operational complexities that make it really hard for the administrator.
Well, and what I really liked is at first when I heard about this idea and the name, I was like, oh, great, we're going to like swizzle 12 clusters together and make this like giant 500 node fault domain. And it instead it's you're just mounting another cluster. And so a VM still lives in one place or another. You don't have this amorphous fluid wide striping across clusters. So when you're trying to understand failures or you're trying to understand performance, it's really just the same operations and the same. It's very similar to like fault domains from a design perspective. And looking at like saying performance, you actually can track the performance service actually works end to end. So you can actually see the performance and understand, okay, this is over there, but here's what the IO path looks like.
And so I'm just guessing, right? Like if I put a host in maintenance mode and it has the visibility then to see these other clusters. And so it's just transparent from any other aspect of this, right? So it just has visibility into a second cluster and I can then trade off which cluster I want to use for my storage.
Yeah, we're using vSAN's native protocols, native functionality. We're just simply exposing that storage to one of the other clusters that you have in the data center. So that's where a lot of the functionality and a lot of the considerations in terms of maintenance and operations and fault domains or failure domains, that is all handled by vSAN inherently, just as it would be within a traditional vSAN cluster that was not using any sort of HCI mesh.
Well, and when we first came out with iSCSI and then later with NFS, we've had plenty of people ask. I remember asking PM, you know, well, are we going to support putting down VMFS or putting a VM on that NFS? And the answer was always no. And you always kind of got this response of, if we do want to export storage, we're going to do it in our native format. We're going to do it right. And so obviously, you know, iSCSI and NFS were quite a while ago, but it's good to see that they focused on getting it right rather than taking the quick and easy and just exporting that iSCSI and NFS, because even if you did go and re-implement VAI, you know, you'd be missing SPBM, the awareness for maintenance and failure handling, the performance tracking. You would obfuscate so much of the capabilities of why vSAN in the first place if we had just kind of clutched this onto iSCSI or NFS.
I like it. All right. So, Pete, I also hear there's some changes as to how we handle deduplication and compression.
Yeah. One of the things that we've done with vSAN 7 Update 1 is we are offering yet another space efficiency feature and living at the cluster level. So one of the things or one of the offerings that we've had historically has been deduplication and compression. And it was a single feature really for the purpose of improving that space efficiency. And we developed that at a time where the market conditions for flash were such that, you know, it was really spendy. So we wanted to make sure that we were providing a space efficiency feature that was as space efficient as possible. Well, what we've learned since then is that, you know, there's a number of different kinds of workloads that simply aren't able to take advantage of that form of space efficiency where you have a deduplication. So that's where we want to sort of accommodate many of those workloads by introducing a compression-only feature. And again, this is enabled simply at the cluster level, just like deduplication and compression. And this is really going to allow many of our users to tailor the needs based off of whatever workloads that they have. And paired with that, it also introduces some additional operational improvements. So for example, when users would choose deduplication and compression, that would create a failure domain in which if you had a single storage device failure at the capacity tier, the entire disk group would no longer be available. Now, if they were to use compression only, that single discrete failure would only affect that storage device. So operationally, then it really mimics if an environment in which no forms of space efficiency were being used.
Oh, wow. So you get the benefits of some efficiency. And also if you add on some of the other efficiencies, RAID 5, RAID 6, unmap, you can still keep your, you know, your cost per gigabyte pretty reasonable while getting kind of the faster benefit, faster rebuild benefits, more granular rebuild benefits, and not having to pay for that metadata amplification that's just inherent to dedupe.
Yeah, it's really a win-win all the way through. You're reducing that because you're reducing the failure domain. You're reducing the potential for the amount of data that needs to be rebuilt.
Right.
And because of this smaller sort of operational domain within the disk group, we can actually improve the destaging performance because now we have multiple threads that are destaging to each respective storage device within the disk group. So once you eliminate the deduplication engine or that process that is occurring during the time of D stage. And then you're increasing the amount of parallel threads that can send that data to the capacity tier. That's when we can really improve the performance.
That's nice.
I like you bringing up the parallelization here, but I got to ask you, Pete, isn't vSAN just single threaded? I thought it all was one thread. So,
one of the great misnomers about vSAN. Certainly. But
yeah, I think this is great because I no longer need to debunk the FUD around failed disk groups. There's been a lot of misinformation around the fact that when a disk group fails, whether or not your vSAN objects are still available, and of course they are. The duplicate copies just need to be rebuilt. And of course, there's a small performance penalty that goes along with that. But nevertheless, that's great to hear that we are now limiting the failure domain to an individual disk, which is fantastic.
Yeah, most certainly. Many of those workloads, by the way, when they are not necessarily favorable to the deduplication process, they have to run through that process anyway. So, our position was, given the state and prevalence of Flash, it really made sense for us to be able to offer this as an offering for our users.
Beautiful.
Well, and particularly for, as depending on the Flash you choose, if you're using some of those cheaper QLC drives, the sustained write throughput may not actually be as impressive as you think. I know it's still a Flash device, but anything to reduce that overhead and to a certain degree compact that data before it goes south through that destager is, a net reduction in overhead and in theory a net improvement in what actually gets compacted and pushed down. So should help quite a bit.
Absolutely. And I also heard that there is a lot more as it pertains to space efficiency. I heard the Slack space made some changes. Yeah.
Banish that word from your dictionary, Pete.
Yes, indeed. We made some tremendous changes here with regards to what we recommend in terms of the amount of free space that is recommended for a vSAN cluster in production. Typically, that was in that range of 25 to 30% that we would recommend. And that was a fixed or a static percentage, regardless of how large or how small the cluster size was. Well, we've made some behind the scenes changes to how the data is placed and how it's handled during times of resynchronizations and so forth, so that we've been able to reduce the effective amount required for a vSAN cluster. And this feature alone may be what may be worth many customers actually running through the upgrade itself, because you're going to reclaim essentially free space that is available on your cluster. Now, just as John mentioned, the reference to Slack space, actually we're getting rid of that term here in vSAN 7 update 1. This falls under the umbrella now of reserved capacity. And there are two components that make up that reserved capacity. There's the operations reserve, and that's for these transient operations that occur, such as resynchronizations and the rebalancing and all of those things. But then there is a host rebuild reserve. And this is a reflection of the capacity required in the event that you had a sustained host failure and you needed to sort of rebuild that data somewhere else, sort of an N plus one style of a design. Yeah. So now that they're broken up into two specific subcomponents, now we can provide an estimation on the percentage necessary that is very prescriptive and very concise to the size of the cluster. So as the size of the cluster increases, then the percentage decreases simply by the nature of that N plus one strategy.
Well, and this reminds me of kind of like admission control, where you can go ahead and reserve for your compute side. We now have that on the storage in terms of that. Now, I noticed that when I turned this on, some capacity actually disappeared from the raw data store. Is that expected?
Yes. So that's one of the things that we wanted to provide a better understanding for our users is how the raw capacity was being used. And we wanted to simplify that interface for the users so that they clearly understood what was being used and what remains available. That's something that many of our users are familiar with traditional storage. And so we wanted to really emulate that as much as we could.
Yeah, I like that idea of hiding the space away, because there's a lot of people who they're like, if they can see it, they'll fill it up.
Yeah,
and for sure. That's obviously going to cause problems. So it's nice that you can just turn those two checkboxes on and those guardrails come up on the side and protect you.
So I can add the the term slack space to the list of trigger words for John alongside with
six. I'm going to throw things at you, Pete. It's
yeah, that's getting to be a pretty long list at this point.
Yeah. Oh, so we're going to talk about SIFs next, huh? I'm going to beat you to it.
Yeah, that's a pretty good segue. Let's just talk about the new enhancements to SIFs. Nah. In all seriousness, file services had a little bit of an enhancement as well in this update, correct?
Yes, we introduced a couple of really important aspects to the file services functionality here in vSAN 7 Update 1. Of course, this debuted in vSAN 7, and that provided initial support for NFS 4.1 and version 3. Now with vSAN 7 Update 1, we also introduce SMB, and that is for multiple versions of SMB. And what's also really important here to understand is that we've introduced authentication for these respective connections, whether they're NFS or SMB. So for Windows-based share connections and Windows-based clients, they'll be using Active Directory. And then for NFS-based connections, they'll be using Kerberos. So it's going to provide that operational environment that is very familiar with many administrators for them typically serving up NFS and SMB-based shares.
And with SMB, specifically SMB versions, what?
Versions 2.1 and 3, right?
Correct. And you know what the proper response is if someone asks about, you know, SMB1 SIFs? It's real easy because they're going to say, but I got this Konica Minolta that, you know, it needs a SIFs directory to write to. And let me help you here. So you're going to get a toner cartridge, you know, one of those refillable ones. And you're going to pop the lid off. You're going to grind up aluminum and you're going to grind up some rust. You can make your own pure rust, but it's a long story. Then you're going to take some magnesium and you're going to wedge that in there. You're going to wedge this toner in there. You're going to hit it with a spark right around lunchtime when no one's around. And then you need to go in the bathroom and practice your I found it this way face. And wow, man, that thing sure was old. It's a good thing that it didn't burn the place down. Now, while everyone's staring around the giant hole in the, you know, the concrete slab where the Konica Minolta used to be, you're going to casually bring up, you know, we should really get one of those newer multifunction copiers that'll actually support SMB, you know, 2 and 3. So we don't have this thing around anymore. And we don't have to keep a Windows 2003 server under a desk for, you know, for the scanner share. So that is how that is your appropriate response when someone says, hey, but can it do SIFs? Did I get that right?
Well, for legal reasons, I'm going to say we do not advocate the burning or destruction of any property.
I didn't give the actual stoichiometry on the ratio of aluminum to rust. Come on, Pete. It's fine.
Yeah, we won't go into deep detail on the vSAN file services piece. There is an update. There's a blog that came out this week on that. There's some demos. John and I actually did a VMworld session that's coming up, which is a deep dive on file services. So lots of great information there on file services. I'm glad to see they finally got the introduction of SMB, in addition to some other things like enhanced health checks and then capacity viewing and the performance monitoring. Pete, I think those definitely got a nice little update to them.
Yeah, they did.
As I tell you not to elaborate on it, and then I cue you up for an elaboration.
So I can't wait to listen to this to see whether my terroristic description of how to make thermite in a printer toner cartridge actually gets shipped in this episode.
Oh, it will.
I was kind of wondering about that too. So
I didn't give the ratios. That's really the critical. Although anyone in high school should know how to make thermite. So. Looking at the release notes, there's something that just kind of came out of the blue here. Like, who would have thought of this? Like for Tunode, you know, if you've got a couple sites, you've created a couple witnesses before, but it looks like there's a multi-witness. Like, I mean, just I never would have expected this.
Yeah, amazing, huh? This is something that we've really been looking forward to sharing with our customers here. And mostly because the two-node topology has really been such a success for us and such a success for our customers. These deployments are all over the place. And by the nature of that topology, that means that when you have multiple two-node sites, you're going to have multiple witness host appliances at the primary data center. Well, that will eventually consume more and more resources as you need those multiple virtual appliances. So we wanted to come up with a way that we could have a shared witness host appliance. And with vSAN 7 Update 1, that's exactly what we've done. And it's just about as easy as you can get. It's sitting there right within the UI. You simply select the two node arrangements that you want to use for the specific witness host appliance. And this can scale up to 64 two node clusters, meaning that a single witness host appliance can manage up to 64 two node clusters. Now, whether or not you actually choose that will be fully dependent on all different kinds of design and operational matters, but sure. that really offers so much more flexibility and reduced resource overhead for sure, but just simplifying the operations, just making it easier.
Oh yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. I don't know why we didn't think of that sooner. That's pretty good. One shared host, just managing up to 64 two-node clusters. That's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, and we'll have an updated OVF for that virtual witness host appliance that will set the recommendations for resources for that virtual witness host appliance, memory and virtual CPUs and so forth. So that process will also be really easy for the end user.
Well, and you talk to some of these customers, particularly in the retail space or like oil, gas, and you know, it's one thing to be like, oh, I've got, you know, a dozen sites, but some of these people, they're like, oh, I've got hundreds or I've got thousands of sites. And the scale of like having to have your own 64 node cluster just to run the 64,000 witnesses you were looking at. It's nice to see, get some better consolidation on that. So Pete, I don't mean to make this a segue to why everyone should come to our VMworld session, but I know we always have a lot of these kind of fancy, exciting, sexy, cool features that come out with cool names. And then there's some really kind of mundane sounding under the hood, but really that are designed for those people in the trenches who actually have to, you know, run these things that improve their lives. Can we talk a little bit about the latter?
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, when it comes to storage, details matter, and especially resilient storage. And so when we present and provide storage in vSAN, we know that, of course, it's a distributed storage solution, meaning that the data, when it's living resiliently, has to live on multiple hosts. And of course, for various maintenance operations, that data will move back and forth on for whatever the given needs are. Now, one of those scenarios, of course, is entering a host into maintenance mode. And that is something that when we offer that option, we offer one option, which is ensuring the accessibility of the data that lives on there. Yeah. It may have a reduced level of resilience, but the data is still available. Well, a new feature that we're introducing in vSAN 7 Update 1 improves the durability of that data. And I'll sort of explain what I mean by that here, is that let's suppose we have a VM or an object that is protected by a storage policy using a simple RAID 1 mirroring policy with a level of failure to tolerate of 1. If we use the ensure accessibility option within the entering host into maintenance mode, that's going to reduce that level of resilience, but the data is still going to be available. If in the event that there was a failure on the one remaining host with that given object, that object would no longer be available. What we're doing now with vSAN 7 Update 1 is, under those conditions, we will capture the latest writes for that object data and send them over to another host, so that in the event that if you have some unexpected outage of that one remaining host, that you can exit out of maintenance mode the host that you entered into maintenance mode, and then that is going to merge the data and make sure that it's up to date and available, and now that object is fully available once again. So that's what we mean about improving the durability to vSAN object data in these conditions where you're entering a host into maintenance mode.
So it sounds like before you had a trade-off of you got availability and durability, or you got a much, much faster patch cycle. And this sounds like the reason why we're using, and also to be clear, the word durability means, does my data exist in a recoverable state, period? Availability is, am I actively running from it? So it sounds like you take a slight hit on availability potentially, but durability, which is generally what you care more about, can be maintained.
Yeah, we want to accommodate for the conditions in which the administrator was not expecting. So these planned maintenance events, they realized that when they would choose the ensure accessibility option, they were making that compromise and saying, well, the resilience may go down for this period of time, but the data is still going to be available. And sometimes for our customers, they felt a little uncomfortable about that. And to the degree that maybe they would temporarily change their storage policy to a level of failure to tolerate of 2. This means that they no longer have to do that. And it just simplifies the operations. And one of the interesting side benefits about all of this, let's imagine that you didn't have any sort of a host failure when you're entering a host into maintenance mode, and you just go ahead and exit that host out of maintenance mode. We've been able to improve the resynchronization performance as a result of these delta writes, or these captured latest writes to another host, because now it doesn't necessarily have to do a complex RAID tree rebuild or a striping with parity rebuild during that time in which the data is being remerged.
Ah, okay. I hadn't thought of that part of it. Yeah, because it's obviously a very minor scenario. In, you know, you put a host into maintenance mode, you're expecting you've got another copy on a separate host. The chances of that other host going down when you're in maintenance mode is small, but obviously there. And so now we're basically just pushing off any changes temporarily, which folks that would be nervous about this in the past, like you said, would probably go to a failure to tolerate 2, which is, of course, requiring more hosts. It seems like you get the same benefit of having that additional durability, but you don't actually have to have additional hosts.
Yes. And the fact is that the user doesn't have to do anything in order to take advantage of this. It simply operates behind the scenes. And in fact, John and I go into this in a little bit more detail in our session, vSAN Deconstructed.
So that's session 8CI1276?
Yep, that's it.
Sweet. I'll be there remotely.
I mean, the other thing here is that the availability hit is only while that host is offline for the patch cycle, or, you know, it's gone into maintenance and it's come out. It also sounds like it's going to be, once it comes back out of maintenance mode, it sounds like your exposure is a lot shorter because you're not missing all these writes. What else is being done to help speed up this gap?
Yeah, John, great point. So we've made another dramatic improvement in host restart times. And this is focusing on, again, vSAN hosts that have entered into a maintenance mode for whatever sort of maintenance activities that are being performed, and a host reboot needs to occur. This is where vSAN hosts historically have taken a little bit more time to restart than a traditional ESXi host. But we've done some clever things here in how we were able to speed it up. And one of the things that we've done here is that just prior to the host restart, we will commit all of the metadata that lives in this in-memory metadata table on the host that will go to a special location on the cache device that lives in the disk group. And so then once the host restarts, then all of that data is going to be replayed or rebuilt back into this in-memory table simply from that storage device. So it doesn't have to perform all of the calculations that it did in the past, and will really speed up these scenarios for graceful host restart scenarios. So really looking forward to it. We've seen some improvements in restart times that are several orders of magnitude faster.
Yeah, I've heard they were comparable to just a vSphere without vSAN.
Yep.
That's fantastic. Yeah, there's nothing worse than sitting there staring at the rebuilding vSAN for, you know, 10%, 20%, 30%. I've done that many a time. So yeah, this is definitely a welcome enhancement.
One of the other interesting enhancements that we've made to vSAN 7 update 1 is the ability to easily assign a default gateway override for stretch clusters and 2-node configurations. And this is something, you know, again, once again, we've had the 2-node configuration and the stretch cluster configuration be a wild success for our vSAN customers. But during the initial configuration of those, that required that you needed to establish static routes on each respective host that live in that, whether it be a stretch cluster or a 2-node cluster. Well, now we can make that change easily right within the UI. The administrator can make that change and simply provide the default gateway to be used for the VM kernel that the vSAN traffic is running over. So they no longer have to try to remember to go to each respective host, or, you know, months down the road when another host was added, remember in their runbook that they have to go do this. And we've also introduced some health check improvements that are going to spot and detect those scenarios as well. So it's a simple improvement in one respect, but I know every single customer that is running a two-node or a stretch cluster environment is going to be really appreciative of it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Well, just having one fewer thing you ever have to go pull with the CLI or an API on is always nice. And this is something that particularly if you're replacing a host with something manual, it added a lot of complexity to the runbook, specifically when you were handing off to a separate operations team.
All right, we're getting close, Pete. I know there's a couple more I want to touch. I don't want to take too much of your time, but let's see. There were definitely some updates to VLCM. You want to give us the 2-minute drill on that?
Yes, we've made nice improvements here. Once again, just from an operational perspective, being able to handle these various topologies, such as vSAN clusters using explicit fault domain, or two-node and stretch clusters. We can easily handle that now within VLCM. We've also improved some of the scalability aspects of VLCM in that we're able to concurrently remediate now up to 64 clusters. And I believe that was an improvement from, I think, about 15 clusters or so in vSAN 7. And one point of clarity, that's concurrent remediations of those clusters, not of the hosts within each cluster. So we still do one host at a time on that. And then last but not least, certainly, we've introduced support for some Lenovo Ready nodes. There is a new vendor plugin for that. So that's really exciting for all of our customers using Lenovo servers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I did a VMworld session with this with Chris Groh. I don't remember the session number, so go to the catalog and search Fletcha, and you'll find it, or VLCM. And we talk all about, we do a full explanation of lifecycle management using VLCM and also cover all the updates in vSAN 7 update 1. So good stuff there. Pete, I know there were some enhancements to encryption as well, right?
Yes. We're currently of the state in which we can encrypt all the things within vSAN. We've introduced a new data in transit encryption functionality. And again, this is a cluster level service, very much like the data at rest encryption functionality, and it can be enabled or disabled on a per cluster basis and an as needed basis. And this one's interesting because, you know, with data at rest encryption, of course, we encrypted everything as it was residing on the storage devices, and we did it in an easy way through the hypervisor. Well, we are taking this a step forward by using those same VM kernel cryptographic modules to encrypt the data in flight as it traverses from one vSAN host over to another. So now the customer can use one or both of these features to encrypt all of their data, whether it's in transit across the wire or residing on the physical devices.
I really love how you're not having to use a key management system for this. It's like the vMotion encryption. So it's seamless. It's easy to turn on. And for those people who are worried, you know, about more sophisticated attackers, nation state style attacks, frankly, against their storage network, they can put their maximum paranoia hat on, which is going to look be made of a slightly different metal than the hat I'm currently wearing. But we're ready for you.
I like it.
Yeah, the marquee would have to be a little bit different if they were in the maximum paranoia state.
We'll be doing something different with aluminum for the hat. So there we go.
It'd be a FIPS 140-2 hat there.
Yeah, that's right. No, John, you bring up a great point, though, about that there is no KMS required for using data in transit encryption. That was a little bit of a surprise when I first saw that. But operationally, it really makes it so easy for our customers. They don't have to manage the keys if they want to use the data in transit encryption.
I like it. All right, Pete, one more before we go. And again, there's a demo of all these features out on the show notes of this page. There's some blogs that I'll also link with all the details. But Pete, there's one more that I wanted you to talk about. There were some changes to the way you monitor performance inside of vSAN. So tell us what the updates are.
Yeah, so we have a couple of new features and enhancements that in terms of monitoring VM performance. One of them is the ability to see the performance of more than one VM at any given point in time. And where this comes into play is your ability to select specific VMs and look at their IOPS throughput, latency, and so forth, but overlay them on top of each other so that you can see if that there's any correlation between them or if there's an impact of one versus the other on the underlying storage system. This is a simple method to use for the purposes of monitoring and troubleshooting, and it is now directly right within the UI.
That's cool. So you could take multiple VMs and overlay their performance. So if there's like a spike or something, and you can see, this is affecting VM1, VM2, and VM3 or whatever. So that seems like a pretty cool. And is that also historical? Because I know most of the performance metrics are real time, but also historical, like up to 24 hours or something like that.
Yeah. So we use the very same performance window database that is used for all of the performance metrics for vSAN. So you'll be able to select it between 1 and 24 hours for up to 90 days of history. Now, one of the interesting things that relates to this, though, comes with another feature, is that many of our customers have used the IO Insight Fling that was out on the Fling's website. And that was a great little fling that allow you to see characteristics of IO that were not exposed any other way. Now this is built right into the UI. So customers can look at really low level analytics of IO for respective VMs and for respective hosts. And so you can use these two tools together to really better understand what's going on in your environment.
I don't know why, but I always love seeing a fling make it into the center stage, into the big time. It's always so cool.
Well, and IO Insight's actually pretty old. I remember using it trying to understand specifically what was going on. I had a weird database batch job, and I was just we were having performance problems. And the challenge was, it had these real short runs that would happen, and your normal performance monitoring intervals wouldn't always catch what was really going on under the hood. And so getting that better visibility, it almost feels like I've got a DVR of what the hell happened at the storage layer. It's kind of been my explanation of what that tool does.
Yeah, I know even some of our friends in GSS have even really appreciated the information that it offers. So if GSS likes it, you should like it as well.
Fair enough. Yeah. Good deal. All right. Well, look, I know there's more, but I think that's plenty for a podcast episode. As I mentioned, I will leave links on the show notes to all of the details of all the updates. This is the beginning of our U1 launch content. Man, there's other things coming too, vSphere and more. So, and then VMworld right behind that. So lots of great content coming. Pete, as always, thank you for joining us, my friend. What are you doing these days?
Thanks for having me.
You staying safe over there? Are your fires treating you good in Seattle? Are you guys okay? Not as bad as California, right?
No, it's I can see a mountain finally after a week. So that's we're in good shape now, maybe.
Glad to hear it. Good stuff. John, anything else before we let this man go?
No, I'm good. I'm going to go. Apple's having their announcement about new watches, so I need to find out what new overly priced watch I need to go buy. So
go ahead and recharge your hat as well. Get it ready for the next episode.
Yeah, the hat will be charged up. Maybe this is a thing. We gotta cycle it out with different themes or something. But yeah. I don't know. The hat gimmick can only last so long before I have to find my new hat gimmick.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to my man Pete Keeler for talking all about vSAN 7 Update 1. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.